Today we get fresh data on home sales. Recently, things have been looking better for the housing market. Sales have been picking up. Prices, at least in some areas, appear to have stopped plunging and begun evening out. Still, realtors across the country are complaining that new regulations are causing headaches for people who want to buy those homes. One big problem, they say, centers around home appraisers, the people who estimate how much a house is worth. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
Back a few months ago, new rules went into effect nationwide that changed the way those home appraisers get selected. Regulators pushed through what they called the Home Valuation Code of Conduct. It was a response to the mortgage debacle. But now, realtors and even some appraisers say it's having an unintended consequence, a lot of bad appraisals.
This was just silly.
Lee Robinson is a realtor with Gibson Sotheby's in Boston's Dorchester neighborhood. She's walking up the driveway of a well-restored old Victorian house. It's got nice woodwork, three fireplaces.
On the inside, it's more like a ship captain's house where the carpenter on the ship probably made all the details. It's got a nice, quiet elegance to it.
A few years ago, the house sold for about $550,000. This time around, a buyer agreed to pay considerably less, $460,000, but the offer was accepted.
We got a guy who wanted to buy it. His wife loved it. Everything was going smoothly, except for the appraisal.
Robinson says it used to be a mortgage broker would call up a local appraiser. Like many cities, you go 10 blocks in any direction and home values can change dramatically. So you need that local knowledge. But under the new system, more appraisers are coming from out of town. What's happened is that now mortgage brokers are not allowed to directly hire appraisers that they like. Instead, many now go through what are called appraisal management companies. They act as middlemen. And realtors and appraisers complain that those companies often hire the cheapest appraiser, even if that person doesn't know the area. And in this case in Boston, the appraisal came back startlingly low. Instead of $460,000, the appraiser said it was worth $350,000.
This one came in at $110,000 less than the agreed upon price. It was crazy.
Robinson says in this case that the buyer hung in there, but the family had to scramble. They paid for three more appraisals with different lenders. It was stressful, and it could have scared off the buyer.
Chris, is a very big problem.
Charles McMillan is the president of the National Association of Realtors, which recently did a survey about all this. It found that more than 70% of realtors see more out-of-town appraisers and longer appraisal times.
More than one-third of the respondents said that they had lost at least one sale due to the delay in the appraisal process.
The fear is that all this will scare off home buyers and gum up the market, right when many people are trying to take advantage of a tax credit for first-time home buyers. That expires at the end of November. McMillan blames the new regulations. They were supposed to create a firewall to stop regulators and lenders from pressuring appraisers. And a lot of people think that that's a good idea. Eric Schwartz is a longtime appraiser in Maryland.
You know, the point we're at today is a function of the irresponsible behavior, not only of mortgage brokers, real estate agents, and some appraisers, too.
Schwartz says mortgage brokers used to call him all the time and offer him lots of work if he'd inflate his appraisals. That is, say that a house was worth more than it actually was. That would let the mortgage brokers get more deals done and earn bigger commission.
If you were willing to do it, they were saying they'd throw a lot more money your way.
Oh, yeah. I would actually laugh at these people sometimes. But the sad thing is they did find appraisers, apparently, that were willing to commit fraud.
But Schwartz also thinks that the new rules are causing problems. He thinks that's mostly due to those appraisal management companies that now act as the middlemen. They've taken over a huge part of the market, and he agrees that they're going with the cheapest appraisers.
It's a flight to low quality, in my opinion.
The appraisal management companies deny that. Don Blanchard is a lawyer with Lender Processing Services, which works with 20,000 appraisers. Blanchard thinks that his industry is getting unfairly blamed. He says, for one thing, appraisal are hard to do right now. There are fewer sales to compare a house with. Also, foreclosure sales are pushing down prices.
I understand that the realtors and others, homeowners, are upset that values are down. But I think that that is more a function of the market than problems with the appraisers.
Still, the National Association of Realtors is pushing Congress to suspend the new rules until the problems can be ironed out. Chris Arnold, NPR News, Boston.
Economists say one reason healthcare is so expensive is that it's not set up like a traditional market. It's full of peculiarities. Our Planet Money team examined one key player, doctors, and asked a simple question. In economic terms, what role does the doctor play? Hannah Jaffe-Wolt and David Kestenbaum have our story.
David, I think I got it.
All right, go ahead.
Here's my proposal. Doctors are like your mom. Economically speaking, they've got your best interests at heart. They take care of us, deliver our babies, they check our ears when we're little.
They see us naked.
Exactly. Mom material. Here, let me show you.
Hello.
Hi, Ma.
Hey, hon.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I have a really bad headache.
You do?
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
My throat has, like, been killing me all morning, and I'm just tired all the time.
For your headache, it would probably help to take some Tylenol. I know you don't like taking things, but it would be a good idea for you to go and get some.
See? She listens, cares, prescribes.
Good, Hannah, good. Yeah, that's cute. Yeah, the analogy kind of works, especially since I've been paying your mom to put up with your whining.
Yeah, so my mom theory runs aground there. My ma does not get paid.
But doctors do. In fact, most get paid for every single sale, every surgery, every procedure. So I have another proposal. The doctor is a salesman, just like this guy, Mo Azzalo, who sold me sunglasses on the street.
This $7, sir.
Now, can I haggle and give you $6 instead?
$6? How about $6.99?
All right, $6.99, deal.
Wow, David, tough bargainer.
I saved a penny.
Okay, look, this is what makes doctors such strange economic actors. Nobel Prize economist Kenneth Arrow, he wrote about this in the 1960s, how crazy this is, that doctors have a financial incentive to act as a salesman. So, and that is why we have things like the Hippocratic Oath, to remind them to act more like your mom. So I asked several economists, who, economically speaking, does the doctor resemble most? And they all named the same one profession.
My name is Ari Cohen. The name of the shop is ABC Ericsson. And we are the car doctors, if that's how you want to call us.
That's right. Your doctor is an auto mechanic. Because of this one big issue that you don't get with the mom or the street salesman, the information problem.
The information problem. For example, the other day, this guy comes into Ari's shop. Good guy. He's got a Buick. He tells him, every time I step on the brakes, the steering wheel, the whole thing in the car shakes. And Ari says, oh, no problem. Really simple. $320 fix. But then?
And we check a little bit more into it, and we find out that the wheel bearings have some play, and the axles out of balance. They bent, or the shaft is not aligned right.
And how much more is that going to cost?
Varies on the car, but like on the Buick, the wheel bearings, they're a little bit expensive, so it can be like another $1,000.
We've all been in this situation. You take the car in, Ari's a good guy, but you don't really know. We as customers, we have an information problem. It's the same with healthcare. Patients can't always judge whether we need surgery, we don't know what procedures are necessary and which aren't, and doctors, they don't always know what drug or what treatment works best.
And this is why when you hear proposals for how to fix healthcare, you hear talk about changing how doctors are paid or that we need more research so you don't have these information problems. So the doctor is in this strange spot. And unfortunately, that is not the only strange thing in this market. You are strange.
We are strange, the consumers. If you think about the guy with that Buick, he may just decide his car is not worth fixing. But if you take your grandmother to the doctor, you'll pay $10,000, $50,000, whatever, because you love her.
And because you're insured. But that's for another time. What happens when your half mom, half salesman, mechanic doctor has an appointment with your price is no obstacle, life-loving grandmother?
David Kestenbaum.
And I'm Hannah Jaffe-Wolt, NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. If you've ever watched helplessly as the interest rate on your credit card went up, pay attention. The rules that govern credit cards changed today. The new rules won't prevent banks from raising your rate, but if it happens, you'll have more time to figure out what to do. NPR's Yuki Noguchi explains.
Until today, credit card companies didn't always have to warn that rates were going up. A late payment or charges exceeding your credit limit could trigger an immediate bump, and consumers had little recourse but to try to pay it all off. Credit card issuers say adjusting their interest rates this way was simply risk management. If a borrower becomes riskier, the interest rate needs to go up to compensate. But consumer advocates and members of Congress who pushed for the new law said the practice hurt those who could least afford it.
That is what contributed to people going further and further into debt.
Eleni Constantine is the director of consumer financial research at Pew Charitable Trusts, a nonpartisan group. She says the law marks an important step to protect consumers. Card issuers will have to give borrowers at least 3 weeks to make a payment. And the provision taking effect today also gives consumers 45 days advance notice of any rate change. During that time, consumers can search for a better deal or close their accounts and pay off the balance at the old rate.
The purpose of the new law was to get interest rate increases to more accurately reflect the costs of lending and the risks associated with lending, and to increase competition in the space so that consumers could shop and choose among different products.
But Pew's most recent survey of nearly 400 bank-issued credit cards found that's not what appears to be happening. Credit card holders have seen their rates increase about 1% in the last year, but Pew found that the rates advertised to customers have also jumped 20% since December. In fact, rates are up the most for potential customers least likely to default. Pew also noted these increases came during a period when the bank's cost of borrowing declined. Nissa Fettes is vice president and senior counsel at the American Bankers Association, which represents the credit card industry. She says credit card rates are tied not to Federal Reserve set rates, but to the probability of default.
Because of the economy, because unemployment's so high, many people are not repaying their loans. And because those losses are higher, interest rates are higher.
Even those with good credit, she says, will face higher costs overall. And she says lawmakers, not the industry, made this choice.
When Congress made these decisions, it understood it would be harder for people and for small businesses to get credit cards, and that limits would be lower, and that credit card interest rates in general would go up across the board. But they made the decision that this was an acceptable compromise for the consumer protection.
Consumer advocacy groups say the main benefit of the new law is that it will force credit card companies to disclose their various fees and interest rates. That doesn't mean consumers will pay more or less in the aggregate. It simply means that when the rest of the law takes effect in February, people will have a clearer idea of what they're paying for. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
Joining us is IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman. Welcome to the program once again.
Thank you.
First, we've heard a lot of numbers about how many U.S.-owned UBS accounts there have been. Is 4,450 the complete known universe of UBS accounts held by people or companies here?
Well, 4,450 is the number that we've agreed with the Swiss government to be turned over to us as part of the agreement that we announced today. These are the accounts that we're interested in. These are the accounts where we think people hadn't paid their taxes. They're the ones that we're going to go after, and it's a very large number. It's unprecedented for the U.S. government to get this large a number of accounts from a Swiss financial institution.
And do I have this right, the timing of this agreement, that the people who are in charge or own those accounts will be notified in the coming weeks or months that the information has been handed over to the IRS, but they have just about 1 month until September 23rd to take part in an amnesty program in which they could avoid prosecution?
Well, focusing on international tax evasion, wealthy people who go park assets overseas and try not to pay taxes, has been an ongoing priority of mine, of the IRS's, and really of this whole administration. We announced several months ago that we were going to have an open window, and it really wasn't related to UBS, where people could come in, get clean with their government, pay all their back taxes, pay a hefty fine, but they could avoid going to jail. That program ends September 23rd. It just happens to coincide that we have this UBS settlement. If people have accounts at UBS, once the Swiss government turns those accounts over to us, they'll no longer be eligible to be part of that voluntary disclosure program. And so my advice is, if you have an account at UBS or you got an account at another institution, the U.S. government is going to be relentless in trying to find you. what we announced today is unprecedented and shows the extent that we'll go to, and that we're going to get thousands of accounts even out of bank secrecy jurisdictions. And so people would be well advised to come in before that September 23rd deadline, get right with the government, pay a hefty fine, but stay out of jail.
Can you explain a bit more about what's unprecedented here? Since, as I understand it, at least the nominal position of the Swiss government and the banking industry has always been that they don't protect people who commit fraud. Did the IRS have to show that these 4,450 account holders were in some way fraudulent? Is there a new standard that the Swiss apply to where confidentiality will be compromised?
Yeah, the change that's happened in the last month is, in the past, fraud had to be a, quote, scheme of lies in the view of the government of Switzerland to be fraud. Now the definition of fraud has shifted in the government of Switzerland's mind to a serious tax offense. And so now just not paying taxes on a large amount that's continually held and not paying taxes can be seen as fraud. And so this is a real opening up of that definition. Frankly, from my point of view, it's blowing a big hole in bank secrecy.
As people follow this story and hear about the few thousand people whose accounts are at issue, or at least the few thousand accounts at issue, should they be thinking of drug lords and gun runners, or dentists and hedge fund managers?
I think they're, first of all, we're going to find out, because we don't have these accounts yet. We signed the agreement today. We're going to start getting these accounts very quickly. I think some of these people are people who gained access to their money illegally. Some of these people are just wealthy individuals who unfortunately thought that they could go hide the money and not pay the taxes that they owed. And so this group, though, we believe are the ones that we're very interested in. So whether they got the money illegally or they just took the money and hid after they got it legally, we're interested in either category.
Skeptics say that once you clean up the problem at UBS and then at all the Swiss banks, there's always the Bahamas. There's always going to be some place where it's worth the while of that local government to tolerate banks that help Americans avoid taxes.
I think the world is becoming a lot smaller. With the internet revolution, with the way that you can move money around so quickly in the world, with the advent of capital markets that can be accessed, you're going to see a lot of behaviors change. We're not naive enough to think that we're going to end all people trying to hide their taxes overseas. But I think this prosecution that was successfully ended today sends a very clear signal that the IRS, the U.S. government as a whole, is going to pursue people wherever they are, and that the world where you can hide your money in a nook and cranny and be immune from us ever finding you is a world that's rapidly going to be shutting down.
IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
And Commissioner Shulman spoke to us from Michigan, where he's vacationing.